Listener-supported KFUO invites you to listen live to our annual Share-a-thon. It's your opportunity to show your support to KFUO. If you can't join us live, please prayerfully consider supporting us by calling 314-996-1518 and asking about our giving levels. You can also click the Give Now button on our webpage. Share-a-thon 2017, April 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
Welcome back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. We are the messenger of good news, and I'm your host this morning, Pastor Jonathan Fisk. It's time for our daily lectionary study, looking at the appointed New Testament reading in order to help you learn how to better discern law and gospel when you enter the scriptures, and so be prepared to give an answer for that hope that is within you, rather than believing these scriptures are there just to condemn you, as so much of the world tends to think. My guest this morning to help us dig through Mark chapter 15, verses 33 to 47. Is Pastor Greg Truey. He serves now at Trinity. Well, actually, he's just about to be installed. Maybe we'll talk about that at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cole Camp, Missouri. A friend of mine from seminary, played a little basketball with him, but also a preacher of the gospel. Welcome to the show, Pastor Truey.
Good morning, Pastor Fisk. It's good to be on.
So you're a noob to Missouri, returning just in the last couple of weeks after a call in January. You want to share a little bit about your congregation or maybe the experience of the shift?
Yeah, sure. So I was installed this past Sunday, and so I'm installed at a very busy time of the church year. I'm looking forward to my first sermon being Palm Sunday and then getting Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, Vigil, and Easter, so I'll have my work cut out for me for the next 2 weeks. Trinity is in a special place. Cole Camp is a small, rural, farming, German community of about 1,100 people. And Trinity, we have 746 baptized members officially.
Wow.
And then
two-thirds of the town.
Yeah, exactly. And then in addition to Trinity, there is Holy Cross. I believe they have just over 200 members, and St. John with about 100. And just south of town, a few miles, is Mount Holda Lutheran Church with about 89 members, I think, something like that. So there's four Missouri Synod Lutheran congregations with the Cole Camp zip code.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had been in Jackson, Tennessee, serving a wonderful congregation that I dearly miss and still love, and that's been tough, where I was surrounded by Baptists.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Now
right.
It's sort of the exact opposite.
Yeah, one of the hard things for, as a parishioner, you sit there and like you want your pastor to kind of be there forever. And the pastor kind of wants to be there forever, too.
Yeah.
But then, you know, a call comes and you get scared. And then maybe he takes it and you wonder, you know, why? Did he not love us? And that's never it. You know, that's not the reason. For the pastor to leave a parish is a tremendously challenging thing. It really does cause grief. And and yet you feel driven. You look at the situation. You think, man, this is where I need to go. This is what I need to do. They need me in a special way. And it's a unique time. It's exciting, but it's bittersweet, much like Holy Week.
That's true. That's very true. The big thing in this deliberation was that Trinity operates a school with two of the other congregations. And so it's right across the parking lot from my office. I can see it right now. And I look out the other window, I can see my house, the parsonage. And I, you know, Jamie and I have five kids. And so now we have this school where all three churches support it in such a way that all of the families of the congregations can send their kids to the school free of tuition. And with my catechetical interests and what I've been working on, you know, it's just, it was a really good, I mean, it was a wonderful blessing for my family, and hopefully I'll be of service to them and the many families here in the Cole Camp area.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of my favorite memories are from my time in Naperville. Bethany Lutheran Church has a school there as well, and I got to teach in the classroom two classes a day. And it was hectic, it was busy, but especially I got to teach fifth graders. And oh, what a joy that age is to give them the catechism and just watch their eyes open up and the questions. And oh, it's a wonderful thing to be able to be involved in catechesis at that kind of a level. So let's shift into that and do it on the air here. Awesome. With the pinnacle moment, you might make the claim, depending on how you view the end of the Gospel of Mark, that actually the next chapter is the real climax and that it just drops off a cliff. But either case, you know, this is where it all happens, the death of Jesus on the cross. Anything about the context of Mark's Gospel, maybe the ending of Mark, which we won't cover because that's tomorrow's reading, you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, if your listeners have been tracking with you through Mark, they know that Mark presents this dark, sort of mysterious Jesus who isn't doing what you expect him to do. And, you know, the Gospel of Mark begins kind of with his baptism, where the heavens are torn open and the Father declares Jesus to be his Son. And today in our text, we'll talk about this. The curtain is torn, and there's something about that curtain that I might make reference to later, but the curtain is torn, and a Gentile centurion makes the same confession that this Jesus is the Son of God as a result of the very thing that is making all the onlookers think that he's not the Son of God.
Right, right. The only place to know him as Son of God is the cross.
Yeah.
And no one's gotten that to this point.
Except the Father, and now the centurion.
And a demon, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Oh, yeah,
there's one
true.
Demon who yells at him about it, and the demons believe and shudder. They have non-saving faith, as it were. So, all right. So
that's right.
We have left Pilate, we have left the praetorium where he has been beaten and scourged and spit upon, crowned with thorns, all the mocking, that's all gone on. They've taken him out, they've crucified him, he's nailed to the cross, a terrifying, horrible reality. And that happened at 9 in the morning, the third hour.
Mm-hmm.
And here we pick up verse 33, when the sixth hour had come, so we're talking high noon, chief moment of the day, when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. So you got 3 hours of no sunshine at midday. And this in and of itself maybe is worth just kind of looking at. I mean, dear heavens, you know, God is dying. and the nature itself sees it taking place.
Yeah, and the prophet Amos in chapter 8 actually speaks of this very event, this eschatological event. In verse 9, he says, on that day, declares the Lord God, I will make the sun go down at noon and darken the earth in broad daylight. So he who is the light of the world, who is shining even before the sun was shining, right? Is being snuffed out, but there's this sort of darkness over the whole world. And I don't think it's just sort of a localized darkness. Mark could have said there's darkness over the land, or, you know, there's darkness on the earth or something like that, like a shadow over that area. But he says there's darkness over the whole earth. And so this catastrophic breaking sort of the world as Jesus begins to die, if you will.
And modern scholars have spent, I think, too much time trying to pin this on some sort of eclipse, and then they find out that there, because we can track eclipses going backwards now, they find out that there wasn't one, and then people say, see, therefore it's a lie. And this is all based on the assumption that everything that happens miraculously in the Bible actually has a natural cause, which is really foolhardy, right? This is a supernatural event.
That's right. I mean, this is the God who could pause the sun,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, this is God's divine eschatological plan being carried out now, the climax, as you said, this is it. This is the event.
You mentioned Amos, I think Joel as well, quoted by Peter on Pentecost, talked about the sun turning to darkness. Jesus has said it in this gospel on Mark that it's the coming of the kingdom of God is when the sun will be turned to darkness. We talked at that point about it being also apocalyptic language that symbolizes something as well, that there's a shifting of an era taking place, that something massive is changing in history. And I was like, well, yeah. This is more than a shifting of an era. This is a shifting of epochs. You got the fallen age ending. And in 3 days, we're going to have the new age, everlasting life, beginning. You can just go on and on. It's like one sentence, right? There's so much here.
Yeah, right. Well, and just to talk about the piety of Holy Week maybe for a second, these 3 hours, right, from noon to 3 p.m. is the reason why many, many congregations continue today to have this Tre Ora service, where they will, you know, gather during the middle of the day, during the hours that Jesus hung on the cross, to contemplate, to pray, to hear the passion again and again, rather than, you know, just waiting till the evening when it's convenient for us. We're going to have, actually, all of the churches in Cole Camp get together to sponsor a Tre Ora service, which is kind of neat.
That's pretty cool.
Maybe some of your listeners will be able to go to one in their area.
And Tre Ora, Latin for 3 hours, right?
3 hours.
Pretty straightforward there.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens at the ninth hour, 3 p.m. rolls around. Now, we don't know if the darkness went away. It's just that there was darkness until this point. Excuse me. Verse 34, at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice. And I don't think this, I mean, it's really... It should call our minds to attention when they quote something in another language that's not the Greek. The reason it's being put here in you know, what do you call it? Alliterate, not alliteration, but just the sounds of the language are being brought across is because this is Aramaic. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, Aramaic being sort of a poor man's Hebrew or a connected language to Hebrew. And then it's translated for us, my God, why have you forsaken me? And just for the listener, if you're looking there, that in the front of the Eloi, you can see the E-L. That's the Old Testament word for God, right? E-L or Elohim. You hear this in a lot of the names of the Old Testament as well. Joel has got the name God in it and so forth. So kind of a cool thing. You can see the my God, and why have you forsaken me? And then there's more going on here, though, too. As you heard this morning, Psalm 22 appointed for the day. This is the beginning of that psalm. Mm. And so, you know, it kind of says, hey, guys, go look. There's something in Hebrew here to check out.
Yeah, the forsakenness. You know, Adam and Eve forsaken in the garden because of their original sin. And Jesus standing in the place as the faithful Son of God, doing what Adam and his offspring could not do, is now bearing the punishment that Adam and his offspring deserve and is forsaken. So, Psalm 22 in the mouth of Christ praying, you know, some have said, well, this implies that he may have prayed the whole psalm. I don't know that that's necessary. We'll probably talk about this as we get into verse 35, but that Eloi could sound like another word, right?
Like Elijah.
Yes, exactly. And so the readers of Mark, and I think this is why Mark translates it for the benefit of his hearers, so that they understand what that might mean, so that they don't hear it like the crowd.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
Well, because as we're going to see, the crowd thinks that he's calling out for help.
Right.
You know, please come rescue me, Elijah. And I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but the reality is, you know, he puts his own life down.
Yeah.
And it is a plea, but it is the fulfillment of what he knew he was going to be doing. And so he's not calling on Elijah. He's speaking to his father.
What I love about Psalm 22, I would agree with you. I don't think he necessarily quoted the entire psalm sitting there on the cross, but he certainly knew the psalm. and we can go and look at the psalm. And so he's quoting the psalm or quoting that bit of the psalm on purpose. And the psalm begins with and then continues with a lot of the descriptions about his crucifixion. So my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? You get his humanity there and the loneliness. But it talks about them casting lots and mocking him and all this kind of stuff. What I love, though, is you go all the way through to the end. And it ends with these three verses. All the prosperous of the earth eat and worship. Before him shall bow all who go down to the dust. Even the one, that's who they're going to bow before. They're going to bow before the one who could not keep himself alive. Yet posterity shall serve him. That is, the future is going to be his. It shall be told of the Lord to the coming generation. They shall come and proclaim his righteousness to a people yet unborn, that he has done it. End of the psalm. Yeah, it is finished. It's just so awesome.
It is. Well, and you know, if we're reading or chanting Psalm 22 at the end of Maundy Thursday service as the altar is being stripped bare, right?
Yeah.
Well, you get, you know, I don't know, it's lengthy, and so the attention of our people may not still be on the text when they get to these verses, and it's emotional evening. As we remember Jesus, you know, on the night he was betrayed, being betrayed and forsaken by his own followers. But it's wonderfully beautiful, because even as he's being led out and beginning to be forsaken, these three verses are continuing to proclaim the great hope that is in him, and the victory, actually, that true believers know is found right in these acts. It's just gorgeous.
My guest, Pastor Greg Truey, talking about Good Friday. As it's told in Mark chapter 15 here on His Time. We're going to be back on the other side of this break to pick up how the misunderstanding of what Jesus said leads further into the text. Stick around.
You can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. And it's even more critical when it comes to the history of God's redeeming grace in Christ. That's the conviction of Concordia Historical Institute, the Department of Archives and History of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. For almost 90 years, we've been dedicated to collecting, cataloging, and showcasing the historical touchstones of Christ's grace and mercy in the life of the Lutheran Church. Help us in the fight against historical amnesia by becoming a member of CHI today. Benefits of CHI membership include our quarterly journal, newsletter, and discounts when you use CHI's research and reference services. You also receive the joy of knowing you're doing your part in preserving and proclaiming Lutheran history for generations to come. Moving Lutheran history forward together. Check us out at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
This is Pastor John Vicker, Senior Assistant to President Harrison here in St. Louis. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts continues the fine tradition of proclaiming the gospel through Christian art. Through the production of altarpieces, paintings, and drawings, Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts portrays the gospel in all its splendor. Their website is agnusdeiarts.com. That's agnusdeiarts.com.
Welcome back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, talking with Pastor Greg Truey about Mark chapter 15 and the goodness of that dark Friday. We left off with some great words about Psalm 22 and also talking a little bit about the Traore service, the 3 hours that Jesus is on the cross, being a service that Pastor Truey's congregation is hosting in the area where he is now in Cole Camp. But also my screener, Mr. Andy Bates, who some of you know very well, he let me know also So we are broadcasting a Treyarch service here on KFUO. That'll be from noon to 3 Central on Good Friday. So if you don't have one in your area, you can listen to one or have it on as you're doing yard work or whatever you want to do on Friday. But you can participate in the prayers of the church as well. We're going to pick up again now with the confusion that Jesus causes when he says, "Eloi, Eloi, my God, my God." Verse 35 tells us that some of the bystanders hearing it said, "Behold, he's calling Elijah." And you can hear the L on the front there, the word God, and then the I, which it can mean my. It doesn't, I think, in Elijah's name. I believe it's just part of the middle of the word. The word is El and then Yahweh, the God's proper name. So God, Yahweh is God, is the meaning of Elijah's name. But anyway, prophet of old, it's told he'll come again. We know John the Baptist actually fulfills that prophecy, but not everybody knows that. And they think he's calling out to have Elijah come and save him. And then you got this one guy runs and fills a sponge with sour wine, put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and take him down." And Pastor Drew, you'd said you wanted to say more about that.
Yeah. So why would they think he was calling Elijah? Well, it's because Elijah is the prophet who sustained 1 Kings 17, the widow at Zarephath, who, you know, was running out of food and thought she was going to die. And so he sustains her by giving, you know, with the bread that she has that lasts longer than it should have. And then in the very next section, raises her dead son. And so Elijah begins to be known as the prophet, the one who, who will help the helpless, if you will. He'll rescue those who are without hope. And so they see him to be calling upon Elijah because they don't believe that he's the Son of God. And so they're still expecting him to try to come down and save himself. And so, yeah, this is one last, hope he has to call upon Elijah. Which is also then why, the guy goes and gets the sour wine, almost in a way trying to preserve Jesus.
Yeah.
So that they can watch this show a little longer. Let's watch. So let's see what happens here. Does Elijah come? And they're kind of mocking him in that regard.
What an interesting thing. I've never thought about this before you said that. Like, what made them think they could kill this guy? Like, with everything that he'd done, I would have been afraid he would come down off the cross, right? Because yeah. he can cast out demons. He can heal people with a touch. Who knows what he's going to do? And there's got to be kind of a sigh of relief amongst the Pharisees then when he doesn't come down.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point too. So if you were being crucified, to cry out with a loud voice would have been nearly impossible.
Hmm. Yeah, right.
Because of the energy that it would have taken to kind of stand back up to get your lungs full of breath. And he does that twice in our text, which means that this man is not dying as a result of what we're doing to him.
Right. Right.
Because he has the strength to speak with a loud voice, but then he dies so quickly that they don't even believe he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and for the listener, just in case you don't know, so the way that crucifixion kills you is not the nails, is not the thorns on his head or anything like that. The way it kills you is it forces you to hang on your lungs, effectively, and you can't breathe. You can use your feet to prop yourself up, but you have to put your body out of joint to do that, and so it creates a great amount of pain. So you're either not breathing or you're in so much pain you can't sustain it, and that goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for up to a day. It's ridiculously torturous. And then you finally die by asphyxiation. You can't get yourself up to breathe because you're in too much pain. And so your lungs fill with fluid and your heart kind of explodes. Not quite, but sort of. And to be able to, as Pastor Drew points out, yell really would not have been a normal thing to have happen. And it had to scare people, too. It's like, what? Why? What is he doing? Is he coming down? Wait. Let's see if Elijah will come. He cries out again, it says, as Drew said, and verse 37, "And Jesus uttered a loud cry and then breathed his last." Not a lot given there. I want to go to John and see what John says there, but we're in Mark. Let's stay in Mark. He just breathes his last. Well, you could go there. I'm not going to do it. You could do it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're right. It doesn't say a whole lot, but I got to thinking about this, right? This ekpanuo, right? This exasperating sort of breathing out of the breath, right? Which, you know, if this is the one who's being forsaken in Adam's place, in all of our places, then when Adam was made, right, you have his body. And then what is put into him but the breath of life? And when the breath of life is breathed into him, he becomes a living being. And in Jesus' death, it's when he breathes out, you know, sort of the breath of life is going out of him. And, so I think there's sort of a reversal there of Adam. Now, it's not explicit here in Mark, but the preacher may be able to do something with that.
That's pretty sweet. You made me go look it up here. So ekpanuo, it maybe doesn't, you don't hear it right away, but the ek on the front is where we get the word exit. So it's a little piece that goes on the front of the Greek words to make it in an outward form of that word. And that panuo is from pneuma. And you got to have heard this one before, that pneuma, spirit. And spirit and breath are the same word in Greek. We got multiple words, but they use the same word. Spirit, breath, and wind all are this pneuma. And so the spirit that's given to man now is coming out. And I'm with you, Truey. This is absolutely the opposite of what Adam has happened, right? He is removing the spirit of life from mankind, but not permanently. And that's kind of the key there, right? It's going to come back. Verse 38. And again, here, Mark, he does these things. He gives us these really intense, deep statements, but never explains them. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Don't worry about it. We're going to move on, right? Right. What does that mean? And I got my own ideas, but I'd like to hear what you think about that.
Okay. Well, you could talk about, now people have access to the Holy of Holies in the temple because this is the curtain that divided the Holy of Holies from the holy place, and that the only person who could go in was the high priest. And so where the Ark of the Covenant had been, and this is where the dwelling place of God was, right? And so the temple's torn, so some people say, well, that means now the people can go in. Others would say, well, now it means that God is out, and he's after you, and he's no longer confined, and so he is, which is all good. Well, I was at a pastor's conference with Dr. Veltz this past fall, and he brought up this interesting little nugget, and I just think this is wonderful, especially in Mark with opening proclamation from the Father, Jesus being the Son of God, when the heavens were torn apart. On the temple curtain were stars. So like the heavens.
So and then you got the centurion's going to say the same thing that God says after. Yeah, that's great.
So he dies, the heavens are torn apart, and then the centurion confesses what the Father had declared. That truly, and I think it's truly, he has always been the Son of God. Not just like he is now become the Son of God, but his faith is that now he understands that this Jesus who's hanging on the cross has always been through this whole time the Son of God.
Right. That's fantastic. Yeah. I don't think I can top that. That's so good. I'm gonna share one other piece because I've also heard, as you have, people say, well, now we can go in to the temple. Now we have access. Yeah. But here's the thing, though. The thing that was supposed to be there isn't there. So the temple curtain is ripped, and that Ark of the Covenant, which the entire Old Covenant requires this box to work, it's not there because it's hanging on the cross instead.
That's right.
Right? And so what it's showing is the end of this age, the Old Covenant's done. Jesus is the final fulfillment of it, and the New Age begins. But I tell you, that's good. What you just gave us was great. and I guess we're going to hat tip Dr. Veltz on that one. Veltz, he focuses on Mark. He's got a commentary about it. Pastors, I really suggest you buy that commentary. He used to tell us about the Greek language You know, boys, 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 reading the Bible in English is like watching the World Series on a black and white TV. But now you got a front seat for the game. And it's that kind of insight that he meant. I don't think all of us actually are quality enough Greek scholars to figure it out on our own. But you can see that kind of shift here, right? That what happened at the beginning of the gospel now happened at the end in a parallel, in a bookend. And it really, again, puts the lie to the people who say Mark's gospel was just hastily written without much thought. It's just, are you kidding me? No, it wasn't.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, go ahead.
And it brings back this eschatological event that we began with, you know, this darkness. Well, the heavens, I mean, this is a catastrophic history changing. This is the culmination of all of human history that has, you know, preceded it.
So the centurion fulfills this. He was facing him, saw this way. He breathed his last, said, truly this man was the Son of God. We've talked about that. We can say more if you want. I'm going to read a few more verses here. Actually, I'm going to read us through the end of the text to make sure we have time for all of it. So there was also women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James the younger, and of Joseph and Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed him and ministered to him, and there were also many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. And when evening had come, since it was the day of preparation, that means Friday, the day before the Sabbath, that is the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself looking for the kingdom of God, took courage and went to the Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate was surprised, you mentioned this earlier, Pastor Trui, that to hear that he should have died already. And summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he was already dead. And when he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. Joseph brought a linen shroud and, taking him down, wrapped him in the linen shroud and laid him in a tomb that had been cut out of the rock. And he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where he had been laid. And that's the setup for the next chapter, that they know where the body is. And they're going to show up in chapter 16. But we got about 5 minutes, so we don't have to rush. But, pick your spots. What do you want to focus on?
Okay. Well, I don't want to just skip over the women, right? But these are the women who Mark tells us had been with him, had been following him. And I think this is why he doesn't give a whole lot of explanation. The readers know who these women are, right? And then he goes on from there, and Joseph is brave to go to Pilate. Now let's think about who goes to Pilate and wants to be associated with the body of Christ, and who was fleeing from Jesus as his body was being beaten and flogged and crucified. His own disciples are going away from his body. Joseph of Arimathea wants to be associated with his body. And Mark tells us it's a brave thing to go to Pilate. And, you know, the frustration, right? I thought I was done with this guy.
Yeah, right.
You know, and now you're bringing this back up and he's dead already. So I gotta go make sure that this is, just imagine the Pilate his thoughts there.
Well, I think normally you wouldn't treat a body that's been crucified with any kind of respect. I'm sure that Rome, I'd have to look at this again, but I'm sure that Rome had a way of disposing of the body in further embarrassment. These are thieves. You know, nobody gives this guy a burial. And yet Pilate, who struggled all the way through this, and he got this very wealthy man, prominent member, asking this, he grants this to him. This is extraordinary.
Yeah, but he doesn't grant it to him right away, does he?
No. Well, he wants to make sure he's dead.
Yeah, because he died so quickly. This is weird, you know? And so go make sure, which, by the way, is only further, proof it confirms the biblical account. The writers aren't trying to make this look like an easy thing. Pilate doesn't even believe that this could happen this way. So he goes to make sure that it happened. I think this is also, why Mark tells us that the women saw his body being laid in the tomb. Like, they saw these things really happened. And I guess we could say something about them needing to get him buried quickly, because they were not able to do burials on the day of preparation. I mean, I'm sorry.
On the Sabbath.
Once the Passover had come. Yes. So they needed to get this done so they weren't touching a dead body and making themselves unclean for the Passover.
Which is going to happen at sundown. So they got a 3 hours or so, 4 hours.
That's what I got.
Okay. Well, any thoughts then about, and we got the linen shroud, which of course not biblically, but extra biblically has caused no small amount of focus in last year's. There's this shroud of Turin out there. I myself don't really think I buy it, but some people do. But you certainly do have him wrapped in something, and in other Gospels you'll see that cloth wrapped and set nicely by the side at the day of resurrection. You got these ladies here again too. So Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and Salome. They're really being set up. We don't get much of them here in verse 40 and 41. They're being set up for chapter 16, when they're going to be the ones who, now knowing where the body is, they're going to go prepare him for burial, and we're going to have this interesting resurrection account where do they ever see Jesus in Mark's gospel? Is the back end authentic or not? I actually believe it's not, and I love the ending. It ends with nobody really knowing where he went, but he's missing, and there's angels talking to everybody. Then you have that debate there. So, anyway, if nothing else, closing thoughts for the moment, or just a short Easter sermon.
Sure. Well, my God, why have you forsaken me? Is the question upon Jesus' lips as he dies on the cross, and in the passion, doesn't get answered until chapter 16. And so, you know, as Christians, we know the whole story. We know he's risen from the dead, just as he said. But when you're reading the passion here in Mark, it's not reconciled yet. And so you're still kind of wondering what kind of God would do this. And so the resurrection then answers that question. And so I hope your listeners will be here when you get to that.
My guest, Pastor Greg Truey of Trinity Lutheran Church in Cole Camp, Missouri. That is the Lake of the Ozarks area, and with a Traore service coming next Friday. If you're in the area, you might check that out and meet and greet him. Thank you for being on the show, preaching the gospel to us. Thank you, Pastor Truey, for being with us.
My pleasure.
Before him shall bow all who go down to the dust, even before the one who could not keep himself alive. Posterity shall serve him. It shall be told of the Lord to the coming generation. They shall come and proclaim his righteousness to a people yet unborn, that he has done it. Ah, Holy Week. It's the best time of the year, people. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. We're the messenger of good news. Back for some Worldview Watch with Pastor Warren Worth in just a moment.